Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. From the right, we have
DJ McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
And from the left, we have
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal who's only here because I have not won the lottery this week. And then forget it. I'm not here. I'm out of here, suckers. From Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a progressive feminist who's trying to ingratiate herself to Greg so she too can retire when he wins the lottery, from Kensington, Maryland.
And I'm Kevin Kelton, a passionate moderate in Los Angeles, and I feel like I win the lottery every week when I get to hang out with you guys. And tonight we are brought to you by HelloFresh. We'll talk more about their service later in the show. And we also want to mention our website, themoreperfectunionpodcast.com, where you can find articles and commentary that we write during the week. Rebecca, did you put up a post this week?
I did put up a post this week. I shared a very funny campaign ad. Well, it's a third-party ad making fun of Ted Cruz, which I think we all approve of. And I talked a little bit about the state of telemedicine and how it is affecting men and women in different ways.
Okay, great. So it's T-minus 2 weeks to the midterms, and it seems that instead of there being issues on the table that voters could decide whether they believe that the Democrats have the better take on an issue or the Republicans have the better take on an issue, it seems that really everybody's talking about civility in politics. And it seems like civility is the issue on the tables going into the midterms. Gang, do you think that's correct? And if so, which side do you think is winning that argument?
Well, the GOP and Trump has been pushing this now. It's going on its second week. They've been releasing videos of Mitch McConnell being yelled at tables. And Trump has released a video called The Jobs, Not Mobs. And to be quite honest, GOP is winning this argument because they've been pushing this argument.
Well, you know, I was just watching a news report about this Democratic angry mobs thing or Republican angry mobs thing. You know, this has been going on. This is not new. I mean, people speak their minds. We're lucky that we have a more formal place to speak about what's on our minds each week. But regular people, you know, if they see Nancy Pelosi or Mitch McConnell or Sarah Huckabee Sanders in public, they're going to want to say something to them. And unfortunately, sometimes it gets a little raw. It gets a little rough. But these people can take it. The idea that there are angry mobs out there, it's just not true. There's protest, and protest is what America was built on. Was the Boston Tea Party an angry mob? I mean, that's how America was formed.
Well, it was a Tea Party. It was the most civil protest. I know. I
yeah, no, that was an actual mob.
That was a mob. But, I just had a flashback to Donald Trump standing there in the middle of a stage looking at the camera and saying, "She's such a nasty woman." And, you know, that's where we are. And for anybody to pretend like we're going back to pre-2016 rules of discourse is just being naive.
And the other thing we need to realize is the folks who insist that they are so concerned about civility are the ones who are led by a man who went to a rally in Montana and told everyone how happy he was to support a candidate who body slammed a reporter for asking him a question and actually touted that he's such a great guy because he body slammed a reporter. All right, you can either talk about civility or you can praise body slamming a reporter. You can't do both.
Right, but Trump does that to get this reaction. I think these are lines that he's purposely come up with to get media reaction so people like us will be talking about it for the next week. Who cares what he says at a rally in God knows where? It's a stupid line from a stupid man. Who cares?
This might be new for you guys to be experiencing where, you know, you get legitimately fired up and somebody tells you to calm down or tone polices you. But for women, for people of color, this is actually been going on with us for decades. I can't tell you how many times I've been you know, in a state of righteous indignation about something and had a man tell me, hey, listen, no, you're not going to get your point across if you sound this angry. And it happened just recently on a thread of DJs on Facebook. And so, you know, this is not a new tactic. And the dissonance of it doesn't seem to affect Donald Trump, and it doesn't affect a lot of the Republican Party because they think that their feelings are legitimate, but nobody else's are.
And let's not remove or keep out of this conversation those idiots known as the Proud Boys who espouse violence against their political enemies, 9 of whom were arrested in New York, a bunch of whom should have been arrested in Miami when they tried to break a door down.
DJ, I don't think kicking someone on the ground is espousing. That is actual violence.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Exactly. Thank you.
I don't want to go to a debate with you because...
Fair enough. I undersold the point.
I am going to espouse you with this baseball bat.
Okay, I undersold the point. I give you that. But it just reemphasizes
that. He's trying not to sound hysterical. He's trying to be civil and saying espouse instead of beat the shit out of people.
DJ, settle down.
Thank you.
Don't get hysterical, DJ.
But it is another reminder that the party that is attempting to use the civility card is actually the more uncivil of the two major parties.
Yes. And when we talk about incivility, I think we'll all agree that what was really, really the incivil action of the last week or event of the last week was a journalist and an American, not citizen, but an American resident being viciously murdered and possibly beheaded in a foreign government's consulate or embassy, I should say, and nothing being done about it. That is the real incivility that we should all be worried about.
Oh, and the concept of nothing being done about it because there's money involved of an arms deal.
I don't believe that that's the reason. I think that's the cover excuse.
No, they're saying, you know, we don't want to blow this arms deal.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's what Franklin Graham said. He said, we shouldn't ruin our billion-dollar relationship or $100 billion relationship with them over one little thing.
I thought that was Pat Robertson.
Pat Robertson said that.
Could have been Pat Robertson. All those white evangelicals look the same to me. That was a joke, by the way. See, Greg's laughing.
That's why I'm laughing.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know what else was a real shot at civility this week? Mitch McConnell threatening again to repeal the ACA and then to attack Medicare and Social Security. If you want to talk about being uncivil, ladies and gentlemen, the Republicans want to repeal everything that helps people in need, and they want to do it so that they can justify the tax breaks that they gave for people who don't need them.
All right. I don't know about y'all, but here in Ohio, every Republican ad is running saying that they will protect
pre-existing conditions.
Every one of them. And these are the same people who have voted like 70 some odd times to destroy these pre-existing conditions. And yet somehow this time we're supposed to believe that now they're supposed to protect them. And the leader, the Senate is saying, oh, we're getting rid of these entitlements.
Of course. And it's insane that their argument is we are going to repeal Obamacare, make pre-existing conditions a reality again.
Sure.
And then we'll come up with a plan. We don't have it yet, but we'll come up with a plan that deals with it. That it's so obviously not the way to do this, and it's such a risky endeavor. And they've been promising this plan now since 2010. It's 8 years, and they still haven't delivered on an alternative. So why would somebody believe them when they say, let us vote down Obamacare, let us reinstate the old private market with rescissions, with pre-existing conditions, and then trust us, we'll figure out a compromise with the Democrats later on.
Well, I mean, this is all classic Republican October verbiage. This is the kind of stuff they do every election. They go back to their greatest hits. We're going to reform entitlements when that means we're going to kick poor people when they're down. We're going to repeal Obamacare, which means we're going to kick sick people when they're down. They're bringing up the stuff about transgender protections, which we'll talk about later. We're going to kick trans people when they're down. This is what they do. In order to get ahead, they punch down.
Okay, I've got a couple things here. First of all, I'm probably going to be the only one of the group who thinks that the entitlement structures are going out of control within the next decade and a half to 2 decades, and that something will have to be done about them. You don't necessarily have to agree with what Mitch McConnell wants to do. That is, if Mitch McConnell actually knew what the hell he wanted to do with them, because he doesn't. But
he doesn't have to know. He knows he wants to win an election. That's right. What the talking point's right. About.
But the thing about Obamacare is actually one that personally just infuriates me. Because when I was a Republican, I was told by Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz and Paul Ryan and John Boehner, I was told by all these people, not we will have a plan. I was told we have a plan. We have a plan to replace Obamacare with something better. We have the plan. Don't worry about it. We know what it is. Okay. Last year, we found out, no, they didn't actually have a plan. They were just winging it. Now they're not even saying they have a plan. They say they have a plan to have a plan. It's plans within plans. No.
And they're doing the same thing now with tax cuts. They're now talking about with 2 weeks to go before an election, they're about to come out with a new middle class tax cut proposal that is simply an October surprise to try to put the Democrats on their heels. They don't have a real idea about how to cut middle class taxes without adding another $500 billion to the deficit. They're just, you know, they're waving a shiny object in front of the eyes of very naive voters.
Didn't the deficit just hit like $779 billion or something
yep.
like that?
And yep. Highest it's been since 2010, I think.
And is it my imagination? And I told someone, a family member of mine recently, that the deficit went down during Obama.
It did. Significantly.
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 That depends on your starting point.
DJ, I want to circle back to you. So you mentioned that you might stand apart from us on the need to do something about Medicare and Social Security. Can you give us in like two sentences each what you do to help make Medicare more solvent and what you do to help make Social Security more solvent?
And euthanizing the entire baby boom generation is not viable.
Although it's still on the table.
Okay, for the record, she's joking again, people.
I am totally joking. I'm like Eric Holder. I am joking about these things.
I didn't laugh that time, though.
Let's let DJ do his stuff.
Well, the first thing I would do, and I would actually do it for both of them, would be to means test them. At this point, no matter how wealthy you are, no matter how much income is pouring into you as you have retired, you still get the same Medicare and Social Security benefits as someone who is very much less well off. That is not something that is sustainable. That is not something that Australia does, for example. That is not something that we should do, frankly. We should seriously look at means testing them. We should look at raising the retirement age. People are living longer. People are working longer.
They just did that back. I think it started during the Reagan administration. People don't realize that the retirement age has been going up 2 months for every year of life. I believe it was for people born like after 1937 or 38, it started going up. This is for the baby boom generation. And it's going to tap out at 67 for people born after 1960. You guys weren't aware of this? This has been going on for the last several years. My Social Security doesn't kick in until 66 and 4 months. And again, it's going up 2 months for every year. And I think by the time you get to people born in 1960 or later, the retirement age now is going to be 67, not 65, 67.
When did they do that? Because
what do you mean, when did they do that? Don't you guys know that Social Security doesn't start at 65 anymore?
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, my parents were talking about it.
People don't even realize that. They already raised the retirement age.
Then cut that, because that's actually what I would recommend, a slow roll increase in the retirement age. If they're doing that already, just cut that, because for whatever reason, that just slipped my mind. Fine.
Okay. So again, I'm not blaming you. What I'm saying is that there's so much information that we all have to right. absorb. And DJ, you absorb information better than anybody on this
podcast.
Yeah, I know,
and even I miss that one.
So you know what? We all have a blind spot. That's okay. That's not a bad thing.
DJ is actually a sponge.
I don't know about that. I still hold that we need to look at means testing them.
Yes.
That, I think, is something that we need to look at. And there was a time when Republicans, including Mitch McConnell, actually were willing to consider means testing. They don't do it anymore, but there used to be a time in the 1990s, I was there, I remember, when they actually were willing to consider that sort of thing.
And so were Democrats. In fact, I believe that was part of the compromise budget, Simpson-Bowles. I believe that means testing was a part of their proposed solution. The only thing that I would say on that is I agree with you. The caveat being is where you set that limit for means testing. If you set it at an income of, let's say, $250,000 a year, I'm cool with that. If you set it at $80,000 a year, I'm not cool with that.
Well, that's going to be an argument about what the means is.
Well, and there's some presumptions that you're making about the plans people make for their own retirement. If they are figuring, all right, I need to save X and then Social Security will provide Y, it all needs to be made very, very clear.
I agree, there's transparency.
This all needs to be taught in schools. Like, Social Security and Medicare are not taught in schools. Like, you don't graduate from high school knowing what you're entitled to through your payroll taxes. Like, that's part of the problem. None of us know this stuff.
Because every 16-year-old wants to learn about, hey, you know, this is going to happen to you in 50-some-odd years if you're lucky. And, you know, don't worry about what's going on now.
But you know what? Maybe people would feel a little bit more ownership over the whole thing if they knew I am paying into a system that is ultimately going to prevent me from eating cat food when I'm 63 years old, 67 years old, whatever the number, magic number is right now. If people understood what this was and what their role in the system was, they might be a little more inclined to participate and protect it.
And Greg, I would respond to your point, and it's a well-taken point, that we tell them, hey, if you smoke cigarettes in 40 years, you may get lung cancer. You know, we tell them that if you take out a college loan for $30,000, you may still be paying it off in your 40s and 50s. So why not teach them about this too?
Look, I agree. This is all very important information, okay? But it's hard to be relevant to a 16-year-old or a 17-year-old.
What's sad is so many of them, even people in their 20s, I hear this all the time. It almost is the first thing that comes out when you bring these subjects up. They say, oh, Social Security isn't going to be there for me when I'm that age. I already accepted that. It's not going to be there. That's not true. Social Security is going to be around for the next 70 years. And at that point, they may have to adjust downward how much people will get. It's not going away. Medicare is a solvent program. And the way to make it more solvent, by the way, is to create a Medicare buy-in, a version of Medicare for All. Now, I'm not a proponent of Medicare for All as it's being marketed by a lot of the progressive left of my party, because they're talking about single payer.
The public option has always been a good idea.
Yes. Medicare should be the public option that was talked about in 2009 and 2010.
Before Joe Lieberman killed it.
Yes, before Joe Lieberman and Ben Nelson both killed it. That's true. The idea being,
I just like slamming them for that.
Yes, and they should be, because it was a great idea. The idea being that people can go to the private market for insurance, but there is also Medicare buy-in that you could purchase before you turn 65, that you would pay a relative market rate for, but it would be a lot less than private insurance plans, and it would be more comprehensive. What this would do is it would pump money, those premiums, into the Medicare system, and it would add younger and presumably healthier participants to the plan. And in that way, it would make Medicare more solvent. And you wouldn't have to raise taxes to 60 or 65% on individuals, because the premiums would pay for the Medicare, not the taxes. This is the idea that I wish Democrats were pushing, although I hear very few of them mentioning it. I'm sorry, I went on my soapbox there.
Well, you know, right now we're trying to stop the bleeding, Kevin. We're not a lot of us are trying, you know, in the policy world, flu shots are taking a backseat to trauma care. So, yeah,
yes.
we're just trying not to die right now.
And for the record, you look much taller and more handsomer on your soapbox. So stay up. It's a good look for you.
Oh, you sweet talker, you. And while I'm standing on my soapbox, I'm going to come out for another thing that I think everybody should buy into, which is HelloFresh, which is our sponsor of the week.
Oh,
and actually,
tell her.
I'm being tongue-in-cheek, but we here at the More Perfect Union, we love HelloFresh.
Tell me more. Tell me more.
I plan to. I'm on my soapbox. They have
You're
something
actually
for everyone.
You're actually on a HelloFresh box, Kevin.
Yes, I'm on a HelloFresh box. There's something for everyone in the HelloFresh meal plans. They have three plans to choose from: classic, vegetarian, they call it veggie, and the family plan. If you need more than two meals, you purchase the family plan. And in that way, you can rediscover the excitement of cooking. I'm one of those people who I like to tinker around the kitchen. What I don't like is, you know, having a recipe in front of me, and then I look in the cupboard and it mentions some spice that I don't have. Well, with HelloFresh, you'll never go through that because they plan every dinner for you. You know, you don't have to go out and drop a lot of money on ingredients that you're only going to use once. Their portions are perfect, whether it's for two people or four people. I've done many of these box meals. I've never come away feeling, oh, gee, I didn't get enough to eat. They also deliver right to your doorstep in a recyclable, insulated package. And they have lots of one-pot recipes for seriously speedy cooking and minimal cleanup. That means spending less meal time planning and grocery shopping each week and getting that time back to do the things that you love. Like, Greg, what would you do with that extra time if you didn't have to plan your family's meals every week?
Oh, well, first of all, I would probably bask in the admiration and love of my family. seeing as that they wouldn't have to have hot dog surprise. Hot dog voyage, voyage of the hot dog surprise. That's three meals a week that I make, because my cooking
and surprise,
is,
it's hot dogs.
Surprise, it's hot dog voyage of the damned surprise. I would probably do that and watch them just be so happy if I would not have to keep making them hot dogs every goddamn night.
I know, like, you know, I used to know like three or four meals that I could cook. Then you get these recipes from HelloFresh. They're like six steps. I made a Jamaican jerk chicken with my HelloFresh meal kit, and I couldn't believe that I did it. Actually, I was kind of proud that it came out so good, and my kid was impressed for about 25 minutes, which, believe me, when you have a 17-year-old kid, that's an accomplishment. Impressing them for 25 minutes.
That's more than the usual 3 minutes of being impressed that you would get from a kid.
That's right.
You can also do what my wife and I are doing, which is take part in HelloFresh Wine, where you get six bottles of wine every month for less than $100. Definitely worth it.
Yeah, and they're good wines too.
That they are.
So to get $60 off your first order, that's $20 off your first three boxes or your first three meals. Go to HelloFresh.com and enter promo code MOREPERFECT30. That's HelloFresh.com, promo code MOREPERFECT30 with no spaces, and start your HelloFresh program this week. So let's get back to politics. The Trump administration is looking to define gender. They want to exclude trans and non-binary folks from certain protections and definitions of gender. Guys, this really hits home in my family. What about for you?
This is infuriating on a lot of levels. It affects people I know, people I care about a lot, particularly young trans people I know who are still in school and affected by Title IX protections, because this would impact how Title IX is regulated with regards to gender identity. But, you know, apart from the sheer gut punch of saying, no, your identity doesn't matter to the federal government, there is no freaking purpose to this. Rigidly defining gender based on anatomical characteristics at birth does not impact 99.9% of the American people. You don't gain anything by this definition being in place. You don't gain new rights. You don't gain new privileges. It doesn't affect the deficit or the national debt. It doesn't affect your tax rate. All it does is make people feel smug that right. somehow their definition of gender won. And that's not a good enough reason to do this, because it does inflict real harm on trans and non-binary folks.
I was thinking about this today, reading an article about this issue, and I thought, well, where would this make a difference? Why is this an issue that people are talking about? And the best that I can come up with is it makes a difference in competitive sports. Do we want people who were born men calling themselves or identifying as women and thereby, you know, bastardizing somehow women's sports in high school and college? And, you know, maybe it's going to have some bearing on college applications, law school applications, other places where people might want to, you know, make sure that there's diversity, whether it's in the workplace or whether it's in educational forum. So, okay, those are places where it might make a difference. It might. But how do you balance that? How do you balance that against letting an individual be who they want to be instead of the government mandating who they are? When you put it in those terms, I don't see how the first outweighs the second. Let people be who they want to be. It doesn't hurt anyone. It only makes people feel better about themselves.
Okay, first of all, if you're telling me that sports ball is your answer to is your reason for doing this,
it's not. I'm saying that's the only possible argument.
No, I know. So you're right. And as your common sense liberal, I really do, you know, I'm the guy who watches it like a lot of Fox News, and I do try. And I'm sorry. Someone has to take that bullet.
I'm not sure that makes you common sense.
Greg, every week it's like, yeah, I know what Fox News is. Okay, I've watched Fox News. I can quit Fox News anytime I want. Now you're like, I watch a lot of Fox News.
But I'm to the point where I'm beginning to enjoy it. It's a fetish.
I appreciate the fact that Greg watches Fox News so that we don't have to, because that gives right. me enough cover story to say that I read the Daily Mail so that you don't have to. So thank you. Your addiction covers my addiction.
Exactly.
And I listen to true crime podcasts so that you have to.
but so I'm really, like y'all, I'm trying to wrap my head around this. But for me, it was the first thing I thought of is, wait. There's a lot of people in the medical community who see what the Trump administration here is doing is wrong. This isn't like people one day saying, hey, I kind of feel different. No, this is the medical community is totally behind the people who are transgender. And this is an actual thing. I hate to use that word. So like thing. I mean, this happens. This is real.
This is one of the facets of the human condition, is the way right. I like to put it.
Perfectly put.
It scares the hell. And again, yeah, like I was saying, there is no good policy rationale for it. It doesn't save money. It doesn't improve health and safety. It doesn't improve national security. And it is, once again, Republicans punching down to make their base feel bigger and stronger and better about themselves. It doesn't have a purpose. It's just cruelty.
Okay, so I want to put myself now, I want to give credence to people who maybe disagree with us. So somebody's out there listening to this broadcast, and they're thinking, well, wait a second. You know, that's all well and good and all that liberal lovey-dove, everybody should be able to do whatever they want stuff. But, you know, boys are born with penises, girls aren't, there is a scientific difference, and nothing you say can change that. That's a point of view that people have, and it's an understandable point of view. This is what I would say to them to counter that. Okay, that's how you feel. Why does it make a difference to you? You'll still have your world. You'll still have your belief. No one is going to take that away from you. Listen, I'm an agnostic. Actually, I'm probably an atheist, but let's not get into the details. You might be religious. You believe in God. You believe in the Bible. My belief should not threaten your life in any way. You're a God-fearing person. You believe you're going to heaven. Nothing's going to change that. This is the same thing. I know some people will say, well, we don't want teachers, you know, in school teaching kids that it's okay to think that girls are boys and boys are girls. We've gotten beyond that. We've gotten beyond that with interracial marriage, with the gay lifestyle, with people who believe in different religions or don't believe in religion at all. I think almost everyone would agree that you can't say that an atheist cannot be a public school teacher. If you believe that, boy, you're living in the dark ages. Well, the same is true with this. If somebody wants to put on a dress and call themselves Gail, and by the way, I met this person this past week, God bless them. They're still a human being, and they probably have wonderful qualities that you can find that you like. Why does it make a difference to you? You don't have to come up with the answer. Just ask yourself that a few times. Wrestle with that.
And I would actually take it from a different angle, and that angle is if you think sexual organs and gender are mandated by nature, nothing can change that. Where does your line end? Are childhood diseases mandated by nature and can't be addressed and changed? We've all talked about pre-existing conditions. Are congenital conditions?
Congenital
heart problems. Yeah. A perfect example. Are those things that are mandated by nature and they can't be changed or addressed with medicine? Of course not. Okay.
Cleft chins, right.
If under that kind of theory, you ban all plastic surgery in this country, good luck with that.
Hell, you would have to ban hair dye in that case. Yeah, you'd have to ban tattoos and piercings. People express themselves and they use their bodies as a palette for expression in many, many different ways, and it doesn't harm other people. It just doesn't. And if you can accept hair dye, if you can accept tattoos, if you can accept plastic surgery, then you can accept gender expression. And all you have to do is just sit and take some time and learn to be comfortable with the issue. You know, you're not a bad person if you haven't taken that time yet. But be aware that it's time worth taking.
And while I'm on my soapbox, and by the way, I never got off of it. I was really comfortable
up here. I know,
Kevin
has been on a soapbox. Like he found his light. He's like an Instagram
model. I'm actually 5'8 now on my soapbox. you know what else people should respect? Someone's scientific DNA-proven heritage.
Oh, God.
And yes, we're going to talk about
that's okay.
Young Ms. Elizabeth Warren. Which
is
hard to believe that
wait,
this
what?
Young?
Yes, well, she was also proven to be 42 years old. You didn't need that?
Well done, well done.
Any millennials listening to this right now are like, 42 is not that young.
But it's hard to believe that this was only this past week, but it's true. This was in the news about 7 days ago or 6 days ago. So Elizabeth Warren, she takes this DNA test. Everybody in the country who isn't living under a rock knows the story. It's proven that she is somewhere between 1/64th and 1/1000th has Native American heritage in her past. Now, to put this in English, because the numbers can be very deceptive, that means that her great-great-great-great-grandmother or one or two grandmothers before that were full Native Americans, or that some portion of a younger generation. In other words, her great-great-grandmother might have been half Native American. When you put it in that perspective, and you get away from the numbers, because when you use geometric fractions, they're always misleading. You know, to go from 1/64th, you go from that to 1/128th, that goes to 1/256th, that goes to 1/512th very quickly. It's only three generations.
I just flunked this podcast because Kevin did fractions. It's like 11th grade math.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do is take the fractions away from this discussion. It's really not that great. Let's put it this way. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but again, we have listeners who maybe don't see it this way, and I'm just trying to give them an alternative view. If Elizabeth Warren, when she was a little girl, was sitting with her great-grandma, and she said, you know, you're part Native American because I'm part Native American, because one of my great-grandmothers was Native American. That's the story. And when you put it in that context, is it far back? Yeah, but it's not ridiculously far back. And I'm still seeing people on Facebook in Open Fire and other discussion groups who are making fun of her, and she was right. The president was wrong.
Right, right. I mean, the story is that she was told as a child
By her great-grandmother.
By her great-grandmother. Hey, you have Native American. And she grew up and she wrote it down somewhere. Like, well, yes, I am a Native American. And that's fine because
she never said, I am a Native American. She said she had Native American history.
She checked a box.
She checked a box. And you know what? And the president has been really
insufferable.
I was going to say shitty, but okay.
Okay, yeah, that's better.
And
this is the thing.
At one point, he said it several times. I'll give her $1 million if she takes the test. She took the test, and now he's like, I was kidding. And he even made even a crasser comment, which I'm not going to repeat. The point is, what does this mean? Does this mean she's running for president?
Yes.
Yes,
it does.
Oh, yes, of course
it does. Yes,
it
does.
Okay, and then two, does this mean that we are going to, of course, lose again because she's running for
president? If she's nominated.
Only if she wins a primary.
If she is nominated, she will lose. I'll vote for her, but she'll still lose.
Yeah, she's the Hillary Clinton.
No, that's not even fair to Hillary Clinton. No. Here's the numerous problems with Elizabeth Warren. None of which have to do with her actual family tree here.
Is it worse than we think?
Yes, it is worse than you think. Republicans are desperate for us to nominate Elizabeth Warren. They would love nothing more than for us to nominate Elizabeth Warren. Because if we nominate Elizabeth Warren, Republicans will throw the Republicans will throw this up and turn this into the affirmative action election, the reverse discrimination election. Never mind that none of us want to. They want to. This gives them a chance to dial up the white identitarianism to 12. Not 11, 12. Fuck Spinal Tap. They're dialing it to 12. And Elizabeth Warren.
I'm not sure that I understand your point, DJ. Based on what? Are you saying that it's this Native American issue is going to be the key issue?
It means everything.
The issue will be that whatever Mrs. Warren, however Mrs. Warren talked about her heritage, it is a known fact that Harvard hyped up the fact that she was, quote, a woman of color in their faculty. Whether she wanted to be a part of that or not. Whether they knew about it when they hired her, I don't think they did. They've said they didn't know. She said she didn't tell them. That's fine. But Harvard hyped up the fact that she had Native American heritage when they talked about what a wonderful school they are. That thin reed is enough for the Trumpen proletariat to say, oh, she is Pocahontas. That's actually what they initially called her before Trump totally screwed that up. That's the thing with Donald Trump. He can't even get a political epithet right. He screws that up. They will throw that on her. They will refight the culture war all over again. And on top of that, Mrs. Warren is in no position to be able to win over any moderate or conservative Trump critics to her side. She agrees with the protectionism. She does not criticize the trade wars, which are infuriating conservatives and moderates across the country. She has really no credibility in discussing deficits or responsible fiscal governance because she has been so big on spending. And she's frankly not a very good candidate. She ran 7 points behind Barack Obama in her one electoral test in 2012. Republicans would love to run against her.
I might run against her at this point.
I would hope we don't nominate her. I will wait and see what happens.
Well, here's my feeling on it. Look, they're gonna all make their pitch in Iowa. They're gonna all make their pitch in New Hampshire. They're gonna all make their pitch in South Carolina. And the person that the Democratic Party gets behind is the person who gets the nomination. But we shouldn't be creating this. Oh, Elizabeth Warren, if she runs, they're gonna slaughter her. Let me tell you something, DJ. If Donald Trump wanted to run against Elizabeth Warren, you know what he'd be doing now? He'd be shutting his fucking mouth and letting her win the nomination.
You say that assuming Donald Trump could shut his fucking mouth if he wanted to.
Come on. You know what I'm saying is right, Rebecca.
No, I know what you're saying.
Agree with me because I know that what I'm saying is right. If he wasn't scared of her, he wouldn't be trying to derail her now.
You know who he is most terrified of in the United States of America? Rachel Maddow, the one person he never, ever, ever talks about.
Actually, Kevin, I'm going to disagree, and I'll keep this really short. And this is what the whole thing is, that he wants to set up names and a brand for everyone right now, immediately. So already he's starting right now. These guys are losers. These guys are losers.
Yeah, and he's doing that against the people that he's afraid of.
But you just said he wasn't. But he's not. No,
that's my point, is he's afraid of her. That's why he's doing this. This idea that they want to run against her is bullshit. They want to run against the weakest possible Democratic candidate. And I don't know who that is right now, and I don't think they do either.
The person they want to run against is Hillary Clinton. They're continuing to run against Hillary Clinton right now.
Running against Hillary Clinton.
That's their favorite thing to do.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You know, and they will find a way to make Elizabeth Warren a stand-in for Hillary Clinton when she mounts her presidential campaign. But I don't think any of us can worry about that.
We
simply cannot worry about what the Republicans are going to say about different candidates. What we have to do as Democrats, as a party, is take our time during the primaries, pick our candidates, put in the work, and then coalesce behind the eventual winner. We have to trust the judgment of our fellow Democrats that they voted for someone because there is redeeming value to that person.
And to respect the fact that one person won the vote and won the most delegates. And let me add one thing, and then DJ, I'll go to you. Let me add one thing on top of what Rebecca said. I agree with you. The Republicans want to turn whoever gets the nomination into Hillary Clinton. Let's not do that ourselves. Let's not turn Elizabeth Warren into Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side. Let's not turn Joe Biden into Hillary Clinton. Stop shitting on Democratic candidates. Advocate for who you like. You like Bernie Sanders? Tell us why he should be the nominee. You like Tulsi Gabbard? Did I pronounce her name right?
But that's okay.
Tell us why
Gabbard.
Thank you. Tell us why she should be the nominee. You like Kamala Harris? Tell us why she should be the nominee. Stop shitting on the other people. That's what gets Democrats defeated. DJ?
I would simply say we need to be mindful of the fact that there are a large number of voters to our right who would gladly vote for us to stop Trump, but they are not going to do so if we nominate candidates who largely ignore them. That is why that is why we should look to candidates like the one I prefer, Congressman John Delaney,
Congressman John Delaney.
Who has a record of reaching across the aisle, who has a record of winning over Republican voters in his district, and who has a record of doing well with center-right independents. We need someone who can speak to and listen to those voters, and I think there will be many, many Democrats who will show they can do that better than Elizabeth Warren. I'm already backing one of them, Congressman Delaney.
I've never heard of this John Delaney.
Well, you know, Greg, if you would read more, you might. And that is a transition. I'm not putting down Greg's reading. It's a transition to Blinkist, our other advertiser this week. Because as you guys well know, because I've read this before on the show, 88% of financially successful people read at least 30 minutes per day. They are hungry for knowledge. They're continuously seeking self-improvement, and they are learning every chance they get. And Blinkist is the app that gets you there faster than you can even imagine.
Yeah, Blinkist is the app that takes thousands of the best-selling nonfiction books and distills them down to the most impactful elements, so you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes, all on your phone. With Blinkist, you expand your knowledge and learn more in just 15 minutes than you can in almost any other way. Plus, you can listen anywhere.
You want to read more? You should, but, you know, who has the time? I have hot dogs to make. I have hot dog surprises to make. I'm supposed to be watching Fox News.
And by the way, Greg does read. I was kidding when I said that before. Greg is a very well-read man.
I've got, I'm reading, four different comic books right now. But Blinkist does all that dirty work of turning pages and comprehending long sentences with big words, and you reap the benefits.
And Blinkist has a massive library of titles to choose from. Timeless classics, like What They Don't Teach You at Harvard Business School. I actually would like it if they would also have a recap of What They Do Teach You at Harvard Business School, because I didn't get to go to Harvard Business School. And they have, you know, classics like the parenting book, The Happiest Baby on the Block, which I'm sure Meghan Markle could use right now while she's flying back from Australia, worrying about what she's going to do with her new baby. She could listen to that and become a better parent, and then call Greg for hot dog cooking tips.
And the, you know, the book that I could recommend right now is Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It's a classic. If you've never read it, I guarantee you there's something in that book that will be, you know, helpful to you and relevant in your personal life. Blinkist is constantly curating and adding new titles to their best of lists, so you're always getting the most powerful ideas in a made for mobile format. 5 million people are using Blinkist to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time. You should get started today. So here's how to do it. For a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for the More Perfect Union audience. Go to Blinkist.com/union to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/union to start your free 7-day trial. You can cancel any time. Blinkist.com/union. Tell them Kevin sent you. They won't care. And say he was standing on his soapbox when he did it.
He was standing on a soapbox looking tall and handsome and well-fed with Jamaican jerk chicken.
So back to the news of the week. The story that DJ is just chomping at the bit to talk about that Hillary Clinton is back in the news and everyone is hopping mad. It seems that she has a way to anger people on the left, people on the right, people in the Soviet Union, people in Honduras. I think that entire caravan of people are coming to the United States because they're so upset at Hillary Clinton.
My computer is so upset it might blue screen and completely shut down at the mere mention of her name. I'm just warning everybody right now.
Wow. That's commitment there.
I'm sorry. She was the prior candidate. We can stop talking about her now. She would rather we stop talking about her now, I'm sure. Just let her live her life, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
Hey, listen. She did a television interview. Someone asked her a question about her husband and his, you know, marital infidelity. She answered it. Then everybody's asking themselves, why is Hillary Clinton injecting herself into the 2018 midterms? She wasn't injecting herself. Someone asked her a question, and she answered it. What was she supposed to do?
Well, I mean, the point people are making is that she shouldn't have been doing interviews, and she and Bill shouldn't be doing their stadium tour or whatever the hell it is, that she should be, you know, still wandering around the woods outside of wherever the hell it is she lives in New York.
Chappaqua.
Chappaqua, thank you. You know what? She's a private citizen.
Yeah.
She has a right to make a living. She has a right to say things. If you take everything she says as gospel and democratic, you know, a democratic pronouncement and... that's you. That's not her. And, you know, anything she said, she's got a right just the same as any citizen to say it. You know, we talked about Kanye last week standing on a table at the Apple store.
Right.
You know, he gets to do that. She gets to do this. And maybe it's not ideal, but who are we to stop her?
Exactly.
You're right.
It's not up to us.
You know what? Trump is the president of the United States. He should stop going on tour. He should do his freaking job. Greg, go ahead. I jumped on you.
You guys are absolutely right. But, you know, when Andrew Gillum won the Democratic primary in Florida, he's running for governor. One of the first people who reached out to him was Hillary Clinton. And she said, hey, I will be down there to campaign for you anytime. Tell me how many times. And his camp was like, thanks, we'll get back to you, because they know that there are still a lot of people who still are the opinion. I know my family's one of them that said, you know, we had a choice, Hillary or Trump. And we're still sure that we made the right choice. No matter what Trump does, they still think that Hillary would have been worse.
That's true. She's unpopular. That's okay. That's right. But that doesn't mean that she stops living.
And we now know how the zombie apocalypse will begin. It will begin when Republicans decide in desperation they try to reanimate Hillary Clinton's corpse so they can have a foil. And then that will create the zombie apocalypse that kills us all. What the fuck is wrong with these people?
she still calls into, and she still wants, she calls into campaigns and in races and says, hey,
yeah, well, she got 60, she got 65 million votes. Maybe she figured some of those people would like to hear from her.
Great. And I'm sure there are actually probably campaigns that would like to hear from her. There are districts, there are states where Hillary Clinton would be welcome. If she wanted to come campaign with Jamie Raskin here in my district, everybody would be losing their goddamn mind fangirling out about it. The fact that she is non persona non grata in Florida is more about Florida than it is about Hillary Clinton. And Andrew Gillum has a good handle on the pulse of his state, and that shows that he is a wise politician. And the fact that Hillary Clinton isn't bad-mouthing him about it shows that she knows that he was right.
So, thanks for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at hashtag MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast. And remember to share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us for themselves. And if you would like to join our political debates between shows, we're all in a Facebook group called Open Fire Politics. Like I said, we're all there, and we'd love to see you there, too. Any thoughts for the week ahead? Final thoughts?
So if I win the lottery this week, I will not be here. But do not worry, because I'm going to have my senator, Rob Portman, come in and do this podcast for the next year. And if you don't think he will do this, he will. Because as we have seen in the past, Senator Rob Portman will do anything for money.